Varaha is also described in the first canto. The supreme enjoyer of all sacrifices accepted the incarnation of a boar, the second incarnation, and for the welfare of the earth, he lifted the earth. From the nether regions of the universe, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.7. Lifting the earth, which is sunk to Rasatala during Pralaya, according to Vishnu Dharmoka, for putting the universe in proper order, the Lord appeared with the body of a boar. This avatar appeared during the reign of Swayambhuva Manu. Okay, so Swayambhuva means right in the beginning. Varaha is described in the second canto also. When the unlimitedly powerful Lord assumed the form of a boar, the form of all sacrifices as a pastime, just to lift the planet Earth, the Lord pierced with his tusk the first demon, Hiranyaksha, who was submerged in the great ocean of the universe. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.1. This boar avatar appeared during the reign of Chakshusha Manu. When the Lord appeared in the form of a boar, he pierced with his tux Hiranyaksha, who has submerged himself in the great ocean, just as Indra pierces a mountain with his thunderbolt. Footnote 4. This verse states that the Lord assumed the form of Varaha, but at the same time the form of Varaha exists eternally, and his avatar simply the occasion of revealing that form at a certain time and place in the material creation. Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita 2.3.15-16 mentions the presence of Lord Varaha in the shell of the element earth surrounding the universe, where the goddess Bhumi worships him with superworldly opulence. In the fifth canto, 5.18.34-39, Sukadev describes Bhumi Devi worshipping Lord Varaha in the Uttarakuru region of Jambudvipa. Because these different aspects take part in different places. They all will happen, you know, at the same time. Like Yamaraj has his place, you know, in the bottom of the lower planets. And Varuna also, the bottom of the ocean. At the same time, they have their place in the directions, you know, of Yamaraj in the south and Varuna in the west, right? So on the Loka mountains. So you also have that element, you know. So you get both of these happening at once. So that's the we get that. And so here, Varaha is the Lord of sacrifice. So the element of sacrifice is connected with him, the yagyas and all that. Kusa grass is used. That's considered the hair of Lord Varaha. Because after he came out of the Garbhodak ocean, then when he shook himself, where the water fell, then that's where Kusa grass grew. Right? And also the yagya spoons are the shape is like his lip or like his nose, like this. So at least the Samaveda spoons are like that. The boar avatar invented twice, first during Swayambhuva Manu from the nostril of Brahma in order to lift up the earth, and a second time during Chakshusha, Manvantara appearing from the water. Why and how did the first boar appear? When and how did the second boar avatar appear? What were the colors and forms? As in the case of Matsya, the boar appeared twice in the Kalpa or a day of Brahma. During the reign of Swayambhuva, the boar appeared from the nostril of Brahma and lifted the earth. This is described in the first verse describing the boar. The second verse describes the boar who appeared during the reign of the sixth Manu, Chakshusa. He appeared from the water instead, lifting up the earth and killed Hiranyaksha. So in the first one, he's lifting because of the destruction, like that. The second time is because of the activities of Hiranyaksha. Text 11. The boar with tusks assumed the four-legged animal form to kill Hiranyaksha and lift the earth. According to some authors, however, this form is half man and half boar. The half man, the man boar form is mentioned in the Padma Purana. Text 12. Sometimes the boar avatar is black like a cloud, Jalada Shama, and sometimes he is white like a moon. With either color, he is the form of sacrifice and very strong. The black form appeared first during Swayambhuva Manu, and the white form appeared second during Chakshusha Manvantara. It is stated in scriptures that Hiranyaksha was born from Daksha, who was the son of the Prachetas during the reign of Chakshusha. Thus, the appearance of the boar avatar during the reign of Chakshusha is confirmed by the information about the birth of Daksha during that time. The verse quoted from the second canto, starting Yatra Yata, does not state that the boar appeared during the Chakshusha Manvantara. This verse clarifies the situation. Text 14. Daksha is described in the fourth canto. His previous body had been destroyed, but he, the same Daksha, inspired by the supreme will, created all the desired living entities in the Chakshusha Manvantara. This verse gives the proof. Daiva Chodita means inspired by the Lord, but where does it say that Hiranyaksha was born during this period? The next verse explains. Daksha was the son of the Prachetas in the lineage of Uttanapada. Daksha's daughter was Diti. Hiranyaksha was the son of Diti. At the beginning of the first kalpa of Brahma, Swayambhuva's sons had produced no offspring. Thus the Prachetas, Daksha, Diti, and Hiranyaksha could not have existed then. Can we not also consider that Varaha killed Hiranyaksha during Swayambhuva's reign? This verse answers. The beginning of Brahma's day during Swayambhuva's reign, his two sons did not yet have offspring. One hears only of the birth of his sons and daughters. Thus, at that time, there were no Prachetas, Daksha, or Diti. Swayambhuva had a son named Uttanapada. In his line, the Prachetas appeared. Their son was Daksha. He had a daughter named Diti. Diti was married to Kasyapa and bore Hiranyaksha. Because it doesn't tell the story here, but Daksha was somehow or another then lost his body. And then again, then as the son of the Prachetas. So it sometimes happens with these demigods, like that. Like Brihaspati. Brihaspati? No, Prabhu. Yeah, Bhrigu. Because Bhrigu is the son of Brahma. But somehow or another he ended up taking birth again as the son of Varuna. Like that. So as you get these kind of situations happening. So in other words, the occupational hazards as a demigod seem to be quite high in some cases. Thus, since Hiranyaksha was born long after Swayambhuva Manvantara, the first boar avatar appeared during the Swayambhuva time could not have killed him. Therefore, it should be understood that when the first boar avatar appeared, he simply lifted the earth from the ocean. Maybe the red is black. It's also, any dark color is sometimes called black. So I'm not sure, unless there's another. But yeah, we always think of them as red. But here it says black sometimes is white like the moon. Black appeared during the Swayambhuva, and the white appeared during the Chakshusa. So there may be another one where he's red, and then we're just putting them all together or something like that. Because here it's mentioning the two. But we generally consider that they're one. But he gives that there's two different ones. One is killing Hiranyaksha, one is only lifting the earth. The truth having been discerned in this way, Maitreya, being asked by Vidura, narrated the activities of both appearances of Varaha in one story. So then that's where we get it as one story. Why is it difficult to discern that there were two different Varahas in the third canto, 13th chapter? This verse explains. Thus, because the truth has been concluded by discrimination, Maitreya, speaking on being questioned by Vidura, put different events from different times in one story, because Varaha is one avatar, thus there is no contradiction. So his point is, since it's the same personality doing the same kind of activity, so there's not a contradiction you have two different pastimes, but being told about one person, because they are one person. Text 18. It is mentioned in the Matsya Purana that there was a pralaya during Swayambhuva's reign because of a curse of a sage upon Swayambhuva. Quote, but the earth does not get submerged in water except at final devastation. Thus, why did Varaha appear? Because the earth was not submerged during Swayambhuva's reign. So that was the doubt. This verse answers, because of the curse of Agastya upon Swayambhuva, there was a devastation during his period. Footnote 5. There's a partial devastation. At that time, Varaha appeared to lift the earth, which was submerged. This is mentioned in the Matsya Purana. Text 19. It is mentioned in the Vishnu Dharmotra that by the will of the Lord, there was a sudden deluge during the reign of Chakshushamanu. Why was there a devastation submerging the earth during Chakshushamanu's reign? This verse answers, by the will of the Lord, there was a sudden flood of water during Chakshushamanu's reign. Varaha appeared at that time to lift the earth up, which had become submerged, and also killed Hiranyaksha. This is explained in the Vishnu Dharmotra. One may consult these two works for further information. So this is Vishnu Dharmotra, and what was the other? Matsya Purana. Okay. But Markandeya explains in the Vishnu Dharmotra that there is a devastation of water at the end of each Manu's reign. During the Swayambhuva and Chakshusha Manvantaras, the earth sinks completely, and Varaha appears to lift up the earth. At the end of every Manvantara, there's a flood of water, but though the earth becomes invisible, it does not totally sink. This verse explains this main conclusion. Right, so it gets covered, but it doesn't sink. Right, so this time it sank, so then it's lifted up. Otherwise, it's just covered, and then when the water goes down, it'll be in the same place. Right. At the end of a reign of Manu, the devatas, free from sin, holding post during that period, go to Maharloka and remain there. At the end of a Manu's reign, the devatas lose their post. Those devas go to Maharloka and remain there, watching the devastation from there. O son of Yadu, Manu and the devatas, along with Indra, then go to Brahmaloka, which is attained with great difficulty by those who die facing the enemies in battle. They attain Satyaloka, which is obtained with difficulty by those who died facing the opponent in battle, but they do not stay there long. After the punyas are exhausted, they fall from there. Abrahma Bhuvanaloka Punar Avritinarjuna. Those who have attained Brahmaloka return again, Bhagavad Gita 8:16. But those who are more qualified stay there and become liberated along with Brahma at the end of his life. Footnote 6. These are persons who would have attained bhakti, performed bhakti. Those who are in Brahma Loka with exalted status at the time of final dissolution go directly to the supreme abode along with Lord Brahma. Kurma Purana 1.11.2.8.4. Right, so at the end of the Manvantara's period, then the devatas go from their posts up into the Maharloka, which is above the heavenly planets, so that the devastation that happens then doesn't disturb them. They get to see it, then from there they go to Brahmaloka. But when their punya runs out, then they fall. Right, so then that's the end of their position. Right, that's why it mentions before the Narada and the Kumaras that they stay for the whole lifetime in Brahma. Yes.
So, isn't it usually that Brahma is the first position that we get when we come to the material world?
Yes.
From there we're going down.
Yeah. Yes.
So how is it that Brahma is going back home to the material world from there?
That's if Brahma goes back home, then that's where they go. But also, you see, is Brahma is generally the Lord. You know, so then, you know, he goes to his position in Vaikuntha, so then whoever's qualified goes with him. That's the see, is you have, even in the Pancharatric systems, you have these elements where you go up through all these stages in the devotional process till you get to Brahma Loka, then you remain there until the end of Brahma's life. Then you go with him back to the spiritual world. Of course, when you get to Brahma Loka, then time works in a slower pace. You know, so then, meaning slower pace, meaning his 100 years is just 100 years. You know, so it's not that you're sitting there, you know, strumming your fingers, you know, another, you know, how you say so many trillions of years to go and stuff like that. So you function at that time rate. But in any case, that's standard. Like the Madhvas, that's how they'll go. So for us, Lord Chaitanya is giving that just straight from here, this lifetime, we can go back to Godhead. So that's actually quite unique. Because the other systems, it's quite slow. I heard it takes something like 14 lifetimes or 7. So it's quite a lot of lifetimes. Like Gopal Kumar, I think that path that he goes through is kind of a standard Pancharatric system of elevation, like that. And so then, so we're quite fortunate; we don't have to do all those things. Right.
Text 23. O Vajra, the great Lord in the form of water, greatly agitated with countless waves, covers the earth and lower planets with water. Bhutalam refers to earth, and Satalam refers to all the planets below the earth down to Patala. Vajra was the grandson of Krishna. O Yadava, text 24. O Yadava, all things on earth, planet, are destroyed at that time. Only the famous mountains are not destroyed, O best of kings. Everything on earth, planet, is destroyed, but the major mountains, such as the Himalayas, are not destroyed. They remain visible to the devatas. So in other words, there's a lot of water. This idea that, you know, there's always a thing that there'll be that much water and it will go up to the Himalayas and stuff. So that's how it works. You know. But the Himalayas remain. They don't disappear. At that time, the earth personified, taking the form of a boat, protects all the seeds without discrimination, O offspring of the Yadu family. The earth refers to the presiding deity, earth, the wife of Varaha. Text 26-29. No,
the name is Bhumi?
Yes.
It's the Bhumi.
Yeah. So she's the wife of Varaha. Okay. That's why he comes to lift her up. Because you see, yes, in pictures of Varaha, then generally you see him, he's carrying, he's got Bhudevi, and he's going with her. Like that. Yes. You see these.
Isn't there a deity, a yoga peak like that? I seem to remember.
I'm not sure. What form is it? But he's always, so Bhudevi is his wife. You know, so that's also significant why he would come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, he takes the form of a boar because that's boars are good at, you know, digging around in mud and finding things. You know, plus he's got, you know, good tusks that he can poke demons with while they have to be obstacles in your, you know, program. So it all works out. O tiger among kings, the future Manu and the future seven famous sages remain in the boat. Vishnu, Lord of the universe, takes the form of Matsya with a horn on his head and pulls the boat from that place by his will. The Lord of the universe ties the boat to the pinnacle of the Himalayas. Matsya then disappears. They remain in the boat until the water subsides and a period similar to Satyuga begins. O king, when the waters recede to their previous position, the sages and Manu then perform their respective services. Krita Tulyam means similar to Satyuga. They begin their activities of creating progeny and protecting the progeny. Text 30. Sridhar Swami does not accept the devastation at the end of each Manvantara. He says, there is no devastation after each Manu. In the case of the period after Chakshusha Manu, there was an appearance of devastation for Manu caused by Vishnu's illusory energy. According to Sridhar Swami, there is no devastation at the end of each Manu's reign, but only after the end of the day of Brahma. There was an appearance of a deluge as in a dream after Chakshusha Manu. This is contrary to the statement the Vishnu Dharmotra already quoted. I'm not sure if the gets into it here, but I think Jiva Goswami was mentioning, and he was quoting that whenever Krishna appears, Swayam Krishna appears, then in that Vaivasvata Manu, at the end of the Chakshusha, then there's a devastation, this whole pastime happens. So in other words, this pastime happens, but it may not be a regular thing. It only happens when Swayam Krishna comes. So once in a day of Brahma, it happens like that. Because otherwise, this kind of deluge is generally later, you know. So here, how do you say? Yeah, the 28th. For the seventh Manu, at the end of the sixth, when Krishna is going to appear in his reign, then this happens. Text 31. When there was a complete inundation after the period of the Chakshusha Manu and the whole world was deep within water, the Lord accepted the form of a fish and protected Vaivasvata Manu, keeping him upon a boat, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.15. Completing the incidental topic of devastation, now the author continues to the description of the avatars. The Lord appeared in the form of a fish at the time of deluge at the end of Chakshusha Manvantara, putting Satyavrata, who would be Vaivasvata Manu in the future, into the boat, protecting him from the water. Right? And so at that time, then Bhumi then takes all the seeds and everything and keeps him in the boat also. So you do get the Noah's Ark kind of program.
But it's just the seeds, not the actual animals?
That I'm not sure, because this just said the seeds. I can't remember. I think Jiva Goswami mentioned something else, but I don't remember. At least that much is there. Because the animals then come from the Prajapatis, because they give birth to all the various animals, so then it wouldn't be so much of a problem like that. But in any case, yes.
That would also make sense in the context of the last line of the 29th verse where it says, similar to Satyayuga, they begin the activities of creating progeny and protecting the progeny, so that would, you know, imply a partial recreation.
Yes,
the species will come once more.
Once more, yes. So, with that, seems to be popular. So that story out of all the various Vedic stories kind of remained around the world. So. Text 32. In the second canto, it said, at the end of the millennium, the would-be Vaivasvata Manu. Yeah, it's just Noah's name was actually Satyavrata.
Yeah.
of the name of Satyavrata would see that the Lord in the fish incarnation is the shelter of all kinds of living entities, then who is the complete shelter of the earth? Because of my fear of the vast water at the end of the millennium, the Vedas come out of my, Brahma's mouth, and the Lord enjoys those vast waters and protects the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.12. Matsya, who is the shelter of the earth, who is the dwelling place of all the groups of jivas, was seen by Satyavrata, the future Manu, taking hold of the spiritual paths in the form of the Vedas. Matsya played in the waters of devastation at the end of the Manvantara. Text 33. In the Padma Purana, it is said, having been addressed by Brahma, the Supreme Lord took the form of Matsya and entered the great ocean. Having spoken means the demons have stolen the Vedas from my mouth. O protector of the Vedas, please protect them. Text 34. Like Varaha, Matsya appeared twice in this day of Brahma. The first time during the Swayambhuva Manvantara, Matsya killed the demon and picked up the Vedas. The second time during the Chakshusha Manu, Matsya showed mercy to Satyavrata. In this verse, the author explains that there are two stories combined in the abbreviated depiction of Matsya. So again, that combination of stories. In the day of Brahma, Matsya appeared twice. The first time during Swayambhuva Manvantara, after killing the demon Hayagriva, who had stolen the Vedas. He recovered the Vedas. At the end of Chakshusha Manvantara, he showed mercy to Satyavrata. He put him on a boat with other things and protected him. Having distinguished the two stories, the author then gives two proofs. Text 35-36. Among the verses quoted from Bhagavatam, the last one starting Vishram Sitan refers to the first appearance of Matsya during Swayambhuva's Manvantara, during which pastime the Lord killed the demon Hayagriva and rescued the Vedas. The first verse, starting Rupam Sa, gives proof of Matsya's appearance at the end of the Chakshusha Manvantara, when the Lord showed mercy to Satyavrata and protected him. It is not clear from the three verses alone that there are two appearances of Matsya. These verses are meant to be representative stories of Matsya appearing after the other Manvantaras as well, or from the Vishnu Dharmotra. It is known that there are 14 appearances of Matsya. It should be understood, however, that Matsya will appear at the end of every Manvantara, since the three verses are only expressing a general observation. It is understood that Matsya appears 14 times in one day of Brahma from the Vishnu Dharmotra. So, at every partial devastation at the end of the Manu, then the Matsya appears. Text 37. Yajna is described in the first canto. The 17th incarnation was Yajna, the son of Prajapati Ruchi, and his wife Akuti. He controlled the period during the change of the Swayambhuva Manu and was assisted by demigods such as his son Yama. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.12. Ruchi was his father and Akuti was his mother. Yajna protected the Swayambhuva Manvantara along with the Devakatas, such as Yama, his own son. He became Indra during that period. Yes.
Is this Yamaraj?
Not sure, we'd have to see. Because it might be, but because also Yama is known as the son he's the son of the sun god. Mm-hmm. But the sun god with the shadow of his wife. Because the sun god then, because he was so bright, means that his wife really liked playing in the sun and being in the sun, so then she was married to him, it wasn't a problem. But at times he was just too bright, so then she left and came to the earth and was running around as a horse. And so then he left her shadow. And then with the shadow, sun god had Yamuna Deva, Saturn, Shani, and Yama that I know of. But there were other children as well that were from the mm-hmm. original wife. Mm-hmm. And so then it was noted that by, I think it was Yama, because he's very just, that there was a difference in behavior in dealing with them than the she's not dealing the same. No, maybe he didn't notice. It was the other sons noticed. In other words, she was favoring her sons. So then looking into this, then the sun god figured out that his wife wasn't there. And then questioning his shadow of his wife, then he understood she had come here. And then at that time, then he took the form of a horse, and the Ashwini Kumaras were born. That's why they're called Ashwini. It means a horse, like that. So they were born from the sun god and the sun god's wife when they were the form of horses.
Far out.
Yeah. Like that. So that's there, but and it's not sure because Yama is also changing 14 times in the day of Brahma. That may be one of the ways, and this is another of the ways. So the point is there needs to be 14 Yamas. So here then. But at the same time, is it his son Yama? That was his name, so it's not sure if that is the Yama or he took the post of that or not. Because Yajna then became Indra. Okay. Because he delivered the three worlds of great distress, Yajna was called Hari by his maternal grandfather, Swayambhuva Manu. Footnote 7. This is mentioned in the second canto of Bhagavatam. The Prajapati first begot Suyagya in the womb of his wife Akuti, and then Suyagya begot demigods, the Suyamas, in the womb of his wife Dakshina. So, Suyagya, as the Indradev, diminished every very great miseries in the three planetary systems, upper, lower, and intermediate. And because he so diminished the miseries of the universe, he was later called Hari by the great grandfather of mankind, Swayambhuva Manu. Srimad Bhagavatam 272, text 39. Nara and Narayana are described in the first canto. In the fourth incarnation, the Lord became Nara and Narayana, the twin sons of the wife of King Dharma, Dharmakala. Thus he undertook severe and exemplary penances to control the senses. Dharmakala means a portion of Dharma. This refers to Dharma's wife. For it is said, Ardho va esha atmano yat patni. Half of himself is the wife. The Lord became Nara Narayan as her offspring. Footnote 8. Nara is a Siddha Jiva and Narayan is Ishwara. The significance of this incarnation is described in the second canto. To exhibit his personal way of austerity and penance, he appeared in twin forms as Nara Narayana. Narayana and Nara in the womb of Murti, the wife of Dharma, and the daughter of Daksha. Celestial beauties, the companions of Cupid, went to try to break his vows, but they were unsuccessful, for they saw that many beauties like them were emanating from him, the personality of Godhead, Srimad Bhagavatam 276. Srila Prabhupada comments. Studying the whole scheme of disassociation with women, it appears that a woman is a stumbling block for self-realization, and the Lord appeared as Narayana to teach the principle of womanly disassociation with a vow in life. The demigods, being envious of the austere life of the rigid brahmacharis, would try to cause them to break their vows by dispatching soldiers of Cupid. Because by brahmacharya, that was the most powerful way that you could elevate yourself. So they are always worried about their position. Right? But it's not necessarily worried about that they were after their position. They could also be going for, Janatapa or Satyalokas. Right? But demigods will always interpret it that they're after their position. But in the case of the Lord, right, so that means the army of Cupid, or bevy of beauties. Right, yeah. But in the case of the Lord, it became an unsuccessful attempt when the celestial beauties saw that the Lord could produce innumerable such beauties by his mystic internal potency, and that
and that there was consequently no need to be attracted by others externally. There is a common proverb that a confectioner is never attracted by sweetmeats. The confectioner who is always manufacturing sweetmeats has very little desire to eat them. Similarly, the Lord, by his pleasure potency, can produce innumerable spiritual beauties and not be the least attracted by the false beauties of material creation. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.6. Right, so just from his thigh, he created all these. And they were so beautiful that the soldiers of Cupid here became embarrassed, right? Because they figured out, you know, because they're the best, right? Otherwise, why would they be Cupid's associates, right? So they're not just going to be ordinary girls. But then they felt ashamed because these girls that were coming from the thigh of the Lord were so much more attractive than them. And the demigods were so astonished because they were also, you know, wanted to see that their austerities were stopped, that their beauty was so much greater that they then, you know, they were just so bewildered that they're just watching all this happen. And then all of them are going back into the Lord's, into Narayana's thigh when, how you say, Indra, you know, kind of like came to his senses, at least his material senses. It's like, wait, you know. So he said, give me one. Like that, because they had all disappeared. So Urvasi was the last one. She was just stepping into his thigh. And so that's why she's called Urmi's thigh. So Urvasi, the resident of the thigh. And so then Narayana gave Urvasi to. So she's not counted in the five main Apsaras, because she's in another class. So.
Narayan is Arjuna and Krishna.
Yes. So the point is they, because the Lord is producing all this, then he's not attractive. So the demigods were thinking that they'll be attractive, but they didn't quite understand that he's the source of all beauty in the whole creation. So. That. So that's what we saw before. Krishna in Dwarka, he's not attracted by the feminine graces of the queens. He's attracted by their devotion, but they happen to be using the feminine graces as the medium of their expression of devotion. Therefore, he reciprocates with that feminine exchange.
Yes.
Right. In some sense. But it's not that he's attracted by the feminine exchange. Right?
Yes.
That's the thing. Text 40.
There's a, yes. The Bhagavatam.
The Bhagavatam. Oh, okay. Bhagavatam. Okay. Great stalwarts. And this is, okay, it's the end of that one. Great stalwarts like Lord Shiva can, by their wrathful glasses. I'm putting on my wrathful glasses. Yeah, so it's like kind of the modern, they wear hats. Well, here they wear glasses.
Yes.
Can by their wrathful glances overcome lust and vanquish him, yet they cannot be free from the overwhelming effects of their own wrath. Such wrath can never enter in the heart of him, the Lord, who is above all this. So how can lust take shelter in his mind? Bhagavatam 2.7.6-7. This verse refers to the time when Lord Shiva was engaged in austere meditation. And Cupid, the demigod of lust, threw his arrows of sex desire at him. Lord Shiva glanced at Cupid in great wrath, scorching Cupid's body to a crisp. Is that where they started the whole potato chip concept? It happened in an Irish countryside, and so then they took up the... Yeah. So the point is that Shiva can overcome this lust, but he can't overcome this anger. So in Hari, this never happens. So that's why then he's in a better position.
Mm. Yeah. I think, isn't this also how Cupid gets the name Ananga?
Yes, because Ananga means no body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's another his name. So he had to be born again from someone else.
Mm.
Like that. So many times, it happens quite a bit of time. I think in that time, then he next came as Pajuna.
Mm. Yes.
But he came as Pajuna.
And his wife, Rati, knew this, so then she then came as a maidservant in the house where he was found, and then raised him. So she's always acting as mother and taking care and raising him. Then when he got to full grown, then he switched the mood to wife, and it's kind of like, what's going on? So then she had to explain, well, actually, shooting your arrows at the wrong people. In another scripture, they are said to have two brothers known as Hari and Krishna. Naranarayan are considered one avatar, like the Kumaras. In the Narayaniya section of Mahabharata, this is mentioned. It also says that Hari and Krishna got married. Okay, so Naranarayan didn't get married. Kapila is described in the first canto. Right, so here again, that they are considered one avatar, like the four Kumaras. Text 41. Kapila is described in the first canto. The fifth incarnation, named Lord Kapila, is foremost among perfected beings. He gave an exposition of the creative elements and metaphysics to Asuri Brahmana. For in the course of time, this knowledge had been lost. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.10. He spoke the knowledge called Shankhya, which describes with discrimination the various elements and the Lord to the Brahmana named Asuri. Right, so this knowledge gets lost, just like the Gita gets lost, so Krishna speaks it again. So it came as Kapila to again describe Shankhya. And then we see it in Gita, Krishna is referring to that Shankhya. So in the second canto, he mentions that, analyzes according to Shankhya also. Like that. Text 42 to 43. And so the Shankhya is so that you can analyze how the universe functions, so that you can understand how to get yourself out, right? Because if you show how the creation happens, that's showing how you become into the material world. So then you reverse that, you get out, right? Just like, for example, in that every element that comes, it comes from the last element, but by an addition of false ego. So when this false ego is added, then it gets grosser and grosser. So the greater the false ego, the grosser the manifestation. So you lessen the false ego, it starts to get more subtle. You get rid of the false ego, you get rid of the material creation. Right? So it's a subtle point. And then to understand the difference between the false ego of the mind, false ego of the intelligence, false ego of the body. Then you understand these things, then it makes a difference, right? Yes. Does that make sense? So you understand sense object, the sense itself. Because otherwise we tend to just take them as one thing. I am seeing. But the eye is seeing something, but there's the power of seeing is there. Right? And so where does that come from? It doesn't come from us, because other people see whether we're present or not. Right? And so then the Shankhya is for analyzing, so that you can appreciate that we're not actually the body, and then how we get entangled. So that's the importance. Like that. So these teachings of Kapila and the teachings of the Gita and the Uddhava Gita are basically the same thing. There's three different presentations. Okay. He appeared in the womb of Devahuti as the son of Kardama. He was called Kapila by Brahma because of his brown complexion. In the Padma Purana it is said, Kapila, the portion of Vasudeva, spoke Shankhya, which supports the meaning of the Vedas, to Brahma and the Devatas, Bhrigu and other sages, and to Asuri. Right? So here is a support of the Vedas. So the conclusion of the Vedas is actually bhakti. And so Shankhya is a support to the understanding of bhakti. It helps to establish oneself on the path of bhakti.
Like basically any of the six systems, or the five of the six.
Yes, but it's more, you see, it's more directly used. Because for us, Nyaya is used as a method of presentation as opposed to a system of analyzation. Because what are you going to analyze? Because he doesn't give that. Right, then Vaisheshika adds to that by giving the atomic theory, so then you understand that you do have all these elements, so whatever you're seeing is a manifestation of part of those elements, then it goes back into the greater, reservoir of those elements. So then everything's temporary, so you can understand anything manifest were not that.
Yes.
But that the actual technical definition is given in Shankya. And so there's not need of a further technical definition after Shankya. So it's a complete definition of the elements. Right? But it's just a matter of how many. So here there's 24, so that's accepted by Lord Chaitanya. Because you can give more, because Brahma also created lust, anger, greed, attachment, illusion, madness, all these. So those are also, for some, added. And then you have a few others like this that are part of it. And so they'll say that there's 32 elements. But we see like Brahma, and Brahma Samhita says there's only 9. Right? The mind and the 5 elements. Or let's say the 8 elements and... unless you just put pradhan, because then the mind is included, the senses and the sense objects and everything. So you can condense it also, but then it becomes more confusing. So the 24 is a very nice explanation that is very clear. You can tell the difference between everything very nicely.
Yes.
Like that. If the Kapila in the Bhagavatam is an atheist, why would he speak the atheistic philosophy of Shankya? The answer is given here. Oh, if he's a theist, why would he speak the atheist?
Atheist.
Yeah. He's an atheist. Yeah. English has problems. The answer is given here. The Kapila, who is a portion of Vasudeva, the son of Kardama, spoke Shankya, which supports the meanings of the Vedas. Footnote 9. The demigod Aryama and other residents of Hiranmaya Varsha praise Lord Kapila in these words. O my Lord, your name, form, and bodily features are expanded in countless forms. No one can determine exactly how many forms exist. Yet you, yourself, in your incarnation as the learned scholar Kapiladev, have analyzed the cause of manifestation as containing 24 elements. Therefore, if one is interested in Shankya philosophy, by which one can enumerate the different truths, he must hear it from you. Unfortunately, the non-devotees simply count the different elements and remain ignorant of your actual form. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.33. So others just look at the basic knowledge and don't actually try to connect it with transcendence.
Yes.
Text 44.
Yes. And they don't come to the personal conclusion that the Lord is actually...
Oh, I see. When he's in your actual form, so they don't make it to the personal. You say, okay. Another Kapila spoke knowledge contrary to the Vedas, which is full of false logic, to another person called Asuri. This other Kapila was a Jiva born in the Agni dynasty. He is described by Markandeya in Mahabharata as a descendant and empowered representative of the fire god. Quote, self-controlled renunciants often refer to Kapila as one of the most exalted sages. Actually, it was Agni himself who appeared with the name Kapila and instituted the yoga system of Shankya, Mahabharata, Vanaparva 2.11-21. Text 45. Right, so contrary to the Vedas means if you only get up to the Brahman understanding, that's actually contrary to the Vedas, because the Vedas is about the personal worship of the Lord with the understanding of Achintabheda-Veda Tattva. Like that. That's the actual full understanding.
Yes. I just find it interesting how the atheist Kapila is actually Agnidev, so it's part of the Lord's plan to give that alternative.
Yes, because the problem is people come to the material world not for necessarily devotional intent. So then all these things are presented, but the point is even you want to be nonsense, the nonsense still has to be given by the Lord. Otherwise, people can't come up with that good a nonsense to keep themselves that busy. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say anything comes up. It's popular for some time. You know, like, yeah, the gladiators is popular for some time, and then, you know, something else is popular for some time. Burning witches, that was good for a couple hundred years. You know, so you always have something that keeps everybody busy, but it's always changing. But let's say something like having a family, or getting money, or having a house to live in, or being in control. You know, these are given by the Lord, and people have been mad after them since time immemorial. So, you know, therefore, if you want to keep people busy, the Lord Himself has to give these things. Right? Otherwise, others aren't that smart. Right? Yeah. Text 45. Dattatreya is described in the second canto. Being satisfied with Atri, who desired a son, the Lord said, I have given myself to you. Thus he is called Dattatreya, Datta, the son of Atri. And by the grace of the lotus feet of the Lord, many Yadus, Haihayas, etc., became so purified that they attained both material and spiritual blessings. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.4. The Lord said, I have given myself to you. Therefore he was called Datta. Yadus in person, such as Kartavirya, attained blessings both material and spiritual from him, from this Dattatreya. Yeah, because Datta, remember, one of the kinds of 12 sons is Datta. You know, that's who was given like that. So here then, the Lord gave himself to Atri, so that he becomes, you know, Datta, the son of Atri, so Dattatreya. Oh. Text 46. In the first canto, he is also described. The sixth incarnation of the Purusha was the son of the sage Atri. He was born from the womb of Anasuya, who prayed for an incarnation. He spoke on the subject of transcendence to Alarka, Prahlada, and others, Yadu, Haihaya, etc. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.11. Being chosen by Anasuya, the wife of Atri, he became the son of Atri. This activity is described. He spoke knowledge of Atma. So Anasuya, she's one of the five, you know, big, how you say, great chaste women of the women of the universe. So these five, she's one of the main.
She also appears in Ramayana, doesn't she?
That's the
Sita goes to the forest and then she meets Anasuya.
Oh yes, I think so. I think so. Yes. Yeah, because she, from her, then so much is learned. She comes up in two places like that. Of the chaste women, generally, she's the, not sure, she's the only one I know of giving instructions like that. The others are just taking examples. Like Gandhari, she's one of the five. Like that.
So there's a connection with the name of the girls' school?
Yes.
Well, okay.
Yes.
It is said that Dattatreya is full knowledge of Atma.
Yes.
I think many people in India are considering Dattatreya as impersonalist.
And we spoke knowledge of Atma, but so that can be that it's just the Brahman level. But much of the time you see is that the Lord may be speaking at a far higher level, but people only catch the lower level.
Yes.
You know, because they only catch the medium that you're expressing it through. So typically we see in the Vedic or the Upanishadic knowledge, it's talking about referring to the personality, but through the medium of Brahman.
Yes.
You know, because that's what we see, that's what we're dealing with. So the transcendence, so he is who's beyond, so they just kind of see the transcendence and don't get it any farther. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Because I think also he explained something quite similar to Kapila Dev.
Could be. Yeah, I'm not sure. But means that knowledge that Kapila spoke, it said it had been lost. So in other words, that was standard knowledge.
Yes.
Like that, but it had become lost, so then he came to re-speak it. So if Dattatreya, well, it says that he's after Kapila, so then he can be just explaining the same knowledge now that's been revealed again.
Yes.
And being the Lord, then he's going to. Text 47. In the Brahmanda Purana, described that the Lord, being requested by Atri's wife, Anasuya, accepted to become the son of Atri. This supports the description in the first canto. Text 48. Thus it is said, Vishnu, giving a boon to Anasuya, taking the form of a human being, of a human, by his own will, appeared as the son of Atri. Thus decorated with the dress of renunciate, he was called Dattatreya. Vishnu, no?
Yeah,
Vishnu. Yours is squished also.
Everyone's a squished.
Yeah, the squished. Vishnu, the pervader of the universe, who has a form of a human by his own will, gave a boon to Anasuya and became the son of Atri in her womb. Though the Lord and his body are non-different, there's a distinction because of Vishesha. Mm-hmm. Right? According to the fourth canto, Atri prayed for a son like the Lord. However, the statement from the first canto says that Anasuya directly prayed for a son. That is supported by the statement in the Brahmanda Purana. So it means there may have been that desire for that, but it's because of the prayer of Anasuya that he appeared.
Yes.
Like that. Right, we also see here is that by the... But Manu's saying that means, or no, this is, that's, yeah, no, that's Ayurveda. Ayurveda's mentioning that before conceiving a son, then husband and wife should have an idea of what kind of son they want. Mm-hmm. Right, so you don't end up with a variety of things that you wish you hadn't, you know, incompatible positions, right? So here we see is that Atri and his wife both had the same idea. Mm-hmm. Right? But it's because of the prayer of Atri, I mean of Anasuya, that he actually appeared. Text 49. Hayagriva is described in the second canto. The Lord appeared as the Hayagriva incarnation in the sacrifice performed by me, Brahma. He is the personified sacrifices, and the hue of his body is golden. He is the personified Vedas as well, and the supersoul of all demigods. When he breathed, all the sweet sounds of the Vedic hymns came out of his nostrils. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.11. Not bad.
No, good.
At my sacrifice, Brahmas, the Lord became Hayagriva. From his nostrils appeared the pleasant Vedas. Text 50.
Sorry, I was hoping you'd clarify. I'm just confused. Earlier it said that there's a demon named Hayagriva that was killed by, I believe, Matsya. And then there's also an incarnation called Hayagriva.
What's so it's just a popular name.
John Smith of the Vedas.
Yeah. It would have to be two different.
Yeah, of course.
That's why in the Veda it's always important they mention not only the name but the father's name, because otherwise then you get a difference. You even see it in some of the contemporary traditions that the older traditions that the person is mentioned and his father's name.
Yeah,
especially
yeah.
I think it's, I mean, definitely know it's current in the the Spanish lines that they do this.
Yeah.
But then I think also in the Middle East they do that. That's
Russian.
What the bin is.
Russians do it.
Russians also do it.
Always.
Okay. Yeah. So then you know who they are, because otherwise there's a certain amount of names that go around, and then unless you know who the son of, then you won't miss.
Scandinavia also used to do it.
Yeah.
All the son
Anderson.
Hanson.
Yes.
Anderson.
Oh.
Son of Anderson.
Like Tapila.
Oh, you mean like Johnson?
Yeah.
The son of John.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty strange.
In Iceland, they also have Datya as daughter.
Oh.
So, yeah.
John Datya?
probably not. Well, I mean, daughter of John. Yeah.
Or Datya John.
Datya.
Yes.
What is meant when it said that Hayagriva is the personified sacrifice?
He's the personification of sacrifice, and that he's the Vedas. Means he breathes the Vedas. Varaha is the lord of the sacrifice. You know, so they're taking different aspects. Right? Because he's the one that saved the Vedas and everything. So through the Vedas you can do sacrifice. You had
something? Added to this point, like Kapila, there we have Atheist Kapila and Devahuti Putra
yes,
Kapila.
Yes, yes, yes. So you make that distinction. Mm-hmm. So there must be something there, because it wouldn't be, somebody turned the Lord. So the Lord, the dark side. Revealing the Vedas, he stole them, but he wouldn't have to steal them because his breathing is the Vedas, so it would have to be somebody else, because right, they actually stole the Vedas. So. Because they're already his, right?
Yeah. Or an imposter.
Yeah. Could be. Had on a boar's head mask. Yeah. Yeah. Nowadays you use smaller claws before horse head. Text 50. Appearing from the sacrificial fire, Hayagriva killed the demons Madhu and Kaitava, and again produced the Vedas. Hamsa is described in the second canto. Okay. So Madhu and Kaitava, they appeared before the creation. And so then, how do you say it? Now, which creation? Because now we're going in order of actually their appearance. So this would have to be one of these in between, let's say before, when Brahma wakes up in the morning, before the creation, then Madhu and Kaitava, they stole the Vedas. And so Brahma, since he doesn't breathe the Vedas, then they could actually steal them. So then Hayagriva then killed him and gave the Vedas back to Brahma.
Yes.
So it seems stealing the Vedas was a
popular
thing, one of these Vedic demons kind of thing, steal the Vedas. You know.
Why would they steal the Vedas?
Well, from the Vedas you get everything, so I guess if you have the Vedas, then you have everything. Or, because then the Vedas are authority, so then you get rid of, they have authority issues, then if you have the Vedas, you can do sacrifice, and people are pious and elevate themselves like that, and so then they don't appreciate. Who knows what angle it is, but it seems to be popular because there's Madhu Kaitava and that other Hayagriva. Yeah, they also stole the Vedas. So. Yeah, you wouldn't get much of a bigger heist than that. Because it's not that you just took a book, you actually take the knowledge of it and nobody has it.
Yeah.
So they took it from Brahma's mind. Right? So they were special demons that steal things out of Brahma's mind.
While he was asleep.
Asleep.
Is that correct?
I'm not sure if it's when he was asleep or it could have been.
Yeah.
It was when he was asleep.
They were mental demons.
Yes, they were mental demons. but it doesn't mean that they were. So there was actually only one of them, because he had schizophrenia. But they came from the body of the Lord. They came from the back of the Lord, because the inauspicious things are the back of the Lord. So they came from there.
Well, it's called Madhusudan as well, the killer of the
Madhusudan. Yeah, killer of Madhusudan, yes.
Is this when the Panchacharya, after this was Panchacharya was peaceful?
Yes, that's when the Panchacharya was good. Because then he didn't know the Vedas, and to teach the Vedas would be a long time. So he asked that he gives them like the essence first, so then in 5 nights he spoke the Pancharatric knowledge. Or that knowledge, in 5 nights, so it's called Pancharatra. So the Pancharatra is considered transcendental knowledge. It's not counted within the 14 books, within the material, it's counted within Parat, the transcendental. So Vedanta, Pancharatra, they're in the same category. So Narad Muni is preaching bhakti, but the medium he uses as lifestyle in that is Pancharatra. And then that's done in the form of Naishkarmya, so that you do perform the activity without attachment to the results. Okay, Hamsa is described in the second canto. O Narada, you are taught about the science of God and His transcendental loving service by the personality of Godhead. In His incarnation of Hamsavatara, He was very much pleased with you due to your intense proportion of devotional service. He also explained unto you lucidly the full science of devotional service, which is especially understandable by persons who are souls surrendered unto Lord Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.19. Cha indicates not only Narada, but the Kumaras and others. The Lord spoke to you and others about yoga, bhakti yoga, and knowledge concerning the Lord, concerning the sarupa, the jiva, which those who are surrendered to the Lord can easily understand. Others, however, even with effort, cannot understand these subjects. Text 52-53. Since I am capable of distinguishing the essence of all things, as if separating milk from water when mixed, the Lord appeared from the water as a swan. Dhruva Priya is described in the second canto also. Being insulted by sharp words spoken by the co-wife of the king, even in his presence, Prince Dhruva, though only a boy, took to severe penances in the forest. And the Lord, being satisfied by a prayer, awarded him the Dhruva planet, which is worshipped by great sages, both upward and downward. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.8, footnote 10. Upward and downward refer here to the higher Upari, sons of Brahma, and the lower Adastat, second generation Saptarishis. The first group consists of Marichi, Atri, Angira, Pulastya, Pulaha, Kratu, Brigu, Vasishta, Daksha, and Narada. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.12.22. The other seven sages, Chitraketu, Surochi, Viraja, Mitra, Ulbana, Vasubridana, and Dhuman, are sons of Vasishta and his wife Arundhati. Srimad Bhagavatam 40-41. Okay. Being pierced by the words of the co-wife Suruchi in the presence of the king, Uttanapada, the young boy Dhruva went to the forest to perform penance because he could not tolerate the situation, being a Kshatriya. Pleased with Dhruva, who was praising him, the Lord gave him Dhruva Loka, which those dwelling above, such as Bhrigu, and those dwelling below, such as the seven sages, pray. Because Dhruva Loka is where the Lord resides. It's the fixed planet. It's actually a Vaikuntha planet. Therefore, that's why those above and below will worship. And it's also it's fixed. It doesn't move. So all the planets move around the Dhruva Loka. Sorry?
The North Star?
Yes, the North Star. So you see all the constellations, everything, they turn around. So it comes down like in a spiral, all these. So they're coming down like this, but we'll see them in those patterns, whatever they are. So they have a certain order for us. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that's the order that they're actually in when they descend. But whatever. That's how it works for us.
So Dhruva Loka, do we see always in,
it's always in the same place? Yes, it's always in one place. So you'll see is that, you know, the seven sages, that like either, you know, they're there, you know, either in the beginning of the night or sometime in the night you'll see them, but the other time you won't see them, mm-hmm. right? Because they're moving around. So all these nakshatras, everything, are moving. So here we see them coming up, we see them in relationship to us. Passing, but what it is they're moving in relationship to Dhruva. Right? We just happen to be, you know, the moving by. Yes.
Is Dhruva at the top of the pole still?
is at the top of the pole star. No, it is the pole star. Dhruva Loka is the pole star.
Huh? So long as his planet is destroyed.
No, it's not destroyed. It's not destroyed. So what its nature is means where it will, you know, go from there, or where it's manifest, I'm not sure. It's not destroyed, it's disillusioned. You know, because it's a Vaikuntha planet. So when it's, Durvasa was running around, he went to this planet. He didn't go outside the universe to Vaikuntha. He went to Vaikuntha, meaning Dhruva Loka, to see the Lord. So he's such a mystic yogi, he could go there like that, because he's from Brahma Loka, so then they have more access around the universe.
Visa.
Visa. Yes. But still, you know, it didn't help, because it was about the devotees. So. Text 54. In narrating the avatars appearing during the Swayambhuva Manu, the name Dhruva Priya is not mentioned. However, after excluding the other names, the remaining name of Prishnigarbha should be concluded to be the same person. This is similar to concluding that Govardhana is meant when the word mountain is mentioned in the Bhagavatam verse 10.21.18. Because it says it doesn't mention the name, but we know in other places that Prishnigarbha is who appeared. Yes. So this Dhruva Priya is Prishnigarbha. Mm-hmm. Right? Because it's in the same pastime. Mm-hmm. Did the Lord come from Vaikuntha, and after giving Dhruva benedictions, did he return to the spiritual world? Or did the Lord appear through a mother and father? This is not clear from the previous verse. The present verse clarifies. The names and activities of the avatars during the Swayambhuva Manvantara are described in Bhagavatam 2.7. But there, Prishnigarbha is not mentioned. And Dhruva Priya is also not mentioned there by name, though giving benedictions to Dhruva is mentioned in the verse quoted above. Giving benedictions to Dhruva cannot be attributed to any of the other avatars listed there, because Prishnigarbha's actions are mentioned as taking place in the Swayambhuva Manvantara in the 10th canto. The avatar who gave benedictions to Dhruva should be equated with Prishnigarbha, born from Prishni. An example of a great general description indicating a particular object is then illustrated. Just as Hantayam Adri refers to Govardhan from the context, so a conclusion is reached here in the same manner. Footnote 11. Rupa Goswami resolves the doubt concerning Dhruva Priya by Parisesya Nyaya, the logic of the remainder. In similar fashion, the author concludes that the hill mentioned in this 10th canto verse can refer to none other than Govardhan, the Haridasa Varya verse. Of all the devotees of Hari, this hill is the best. O my friends, this hill supplies Krishna and Balaram, along with their calves, cows, and cowherd friends, with all kinds of necessities. Water for drinking, very soft grass, caves, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. In this way, the hill offers respect to the Lord. Being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, the hill appears very jubilant. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.21.18. The gopis do not mention the hill's name in this verse, but is obvious by using another simple interpretive technique, namely considering the context of the story, that he is none other than Giriraj. Thus it says in the 10th canto, my dear mother, best of the chaste, in your previous verse, in the Swayambhuva millennium, you were known as Prishni, and Vasudev, who was the most pious Prajapati, was named Sutapa. Since I found no one else as highly elevated as you in simplicity and other qualities of good character, I appeared in this world as Prishnigarbha, or one who is celebrated as having taken birth from Prishni. These are Krishna's words. O Devake, you were Prishni, and Vasudeva was Sutapa. Text 56. Since the activities of the son of Prishni are not mentioned in the quotation from the 10th canto, and Prishni's name is not mentioned in the second canto quote, the two can be taken as the same person because of the need for both name and activities for an avatar's descriptions. Atra refers to the 10th canto just quoted, where activities of the son of Prishni are not mentioned. Tatra refers to the second canto where the name is not mentioned. So in one place, the activities are mentioned, not the name. The other place, the name is mentioned, not the activities. But for an avatar, you have to have the name, you know, from the father and the activities to be complete. So then these two go together. Because they don't match other avatars, which are already explained. So then by this principle of the remainder, then that you've taken care of all the other avatars, and only this one is remaining, and you have these two descriptions, so they go together and... Text 57. If one were to argue that the Lord could be considered a separate avatar for just approaching Dhruva, this could apply to other forms of the Lord also. It is possible that he who blessed Prishni and he who blessed Dhruva could be considered two separate avatars, even though it is one person. Or could it?
Is it possible?
Okay. If that were so, then would not Rama or Krishna appear as different avatars every time they bestowed benedictions to different devotees? So it's just because they're coming and doing these different activities doesn't mean it's a different person. Right? Because otherwise then Krishna is going so many places, dealing with so many devotees, so are we considered a different incarnation each time? That's the same person. Right? Just like Varaha is considered one incarnation, though he has two appearances. Mm-hmm. Like that. Text 58. Rishabha is described in the first canto. The eighth incarnation was King Rishabha, son of King Nabhi, and his wife Meru Devi. In this incarnation, the Lord showed the path of perfection, which is followed by those who have fully controlled their senses and who are honored by all orders of life. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.13. This verse describes the avatar called Rishabha. The Lord appeared as the son of Nabhi, who was the son of Agnidra, and his wife Meru Devi. He revealed the ashram of the Paramahamsa. Because he didn't really follow any rules. He just... And then from Jain guru, he saw that, and then he started a process of sadhana based on the activities of this Paramahamsa, like that. So then, and then unfortunately they come out to be, you know, atheists. So, because it's not sanctioned by the Vedas, nor is realizing the Lord their goal. So it becomes not very useful.
Almost.
Okay. The Lord, white in complexion, appeared to teach the Dharma of the Paramahamsas. Because he was the best in all qualities, he was famous as Rishabha. Excellent.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm just thinking about the difference between Paramahamsa and Avadhut. We would normally call Rishabha Avadhut. Yes.
It's the same thing, because the Paramahamsa doesn't have to follow the rules.
No.
So if he does, then he's just doing that for teaching.
But Avadhut is specifically not following.
And Avadhut just basically is referring to that aspect that they're not.
Yeah. So we've used the broad term here.
So Paramahamsa is the category.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of how they're acting. Then they may act within the preaching position or may not, or act as a... So they may act as a madhyama or they may act as
Avadhut is like a subcategory within Paramahamsa.
Yeah. It's not that it's its own category. Like that.
Yeah.
Some make it that way.
Yeah.
Like that. I think in some of your... I'm not sure. In some of the so-called spiritual lines, they make Avadhut its own category.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's not.
Yeah.
That's why we have the title Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya. It's like a special kind of Paramahamsa.
Well, it's Paramahamsas who are preaching.
Yeah.
Because then they'll be your best preachers, because their performing activities is the madhyama, but their realization is that of, you know, their understanding is that of a hamsa, so Paramahamsa. Mm-hmm. So then you'll get that proper, you know, uttama understanding. Does that make sense? Because preaching means madhyama. Mm-hmm. So even a neophyte is taking up the duty of the preacher. So he's performing the occupation of a madhyama, though he may not have the realization that he's doing the activity. Yes.
Prabhupada says in Bhagavatam that Rishabhav was preaching to the yogis to leave the subtle body, but he was not on the madhyama.
Well, it's another, you know, the yogis are in their own category, so. Text 60. Prithu is also described in the first canto. O Brahmanas, in the ninth incarnation, the Lord, prayed for by sages, accepted the body of a king, Prithu, who cultivated the land to yield various produces, and for that reason he was attractive. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.14. The Lord, being requested by the sages, took the body of a king. His activities are described. He milked the earth of all treasures. Because of that milking, Prithu was very attractive. Because, you know, he's done something special, so people are attracted. 61. From the right arm of King Vena, which was churned by the sages, King Prithu, generous one, appeared with a golden complexion. His name is explained in this verse. His activities are described in the fourth canto, chapters 14 through 23. So Prithu means generous. 62. The 13 avatars from Kumaras to Prithu appeared during Swayambhuva Manvantara. However, Varaha and Matsya appeared again in the Chakshusha Manvantara. This is the apparent appearance, but actually Matsya appears after every Manvantara. So this is, yeah, the apparent, because this is the one that's noticed, but otherwise it comes every time at the end of every Manvantara. 63. Nrisimha is also described in the first canto. In the 14th incarnation, the Lord appeared as Nrisimha and bifurcated the strong body of the atheist Hiranyakashipu with his nails, just as a mat weaver tears grass. Because when they weave the grass, they have these wider grains, so they split the grass so that they can do the weaving. So like that. Placing the king of the demons, strung Hiranyakashipu on his thigh, he tore him open, just as a weaver of straw mats tears a piece of jointless grass. Text, so it means that's how easy.
Yeah.
So wasn't he? Was
you can do it all day. Yeah.
Yeah. 64. Oh no, you could do this all Sunday. Many vilas forms of Nrisimha, such as Lakshmi Nrisimha, with many colors and activities, are mentioned in the Padma Purana and other scriptures. Nrisimha appeared in the Chakshusha Manvantara before the churning of the ocean and the appearance of Kurma in the Chakshusha Manvantara. Lakshmi Nrisimha and others are the vilas forms of this Nrisimha. One should see the Padma Purana and other scriptures for the descriptions. It is said, there are many forms of Nrisimhadev who perform many activities. They are visible in Janaloka and the eternal abode of Vaikuntha. The time of Nrisimha is then mentioned. He appeared before the churning of the ocean. Because you have all these different forms of Nrisimha. That he's first without anybody, just alone. Then he's with Prahlad, then he's with Lakshmi, then he's in yogic meditation. So like that, there's so many forms. I think in Ahobalam there's 9 forms are there. Like that. So here we have the first form. When he comes out, he has 8 arms. Then when he kills Hiranyakashipu, has 10. Because 2 more arms for taking out the entrails.
like that, you know. And then after that, when he attacks the army, then he has 1,000 arms. So this is in this Ugra form. Then after that, you have Prahlad Nrisimha, who's more peaceful. Then you have Lakshmi Nrisimha, right? And then there's so many forms within that. Yoga Nrisimha. What is the form in the Nrisimha Pali?
He's killing
the enemy. Oh, he's killing the enemy. Okay. Yeah, because I couldn't remember what he looked like.
So, Maharaj, what is the original form of Nrisimha Dev?
What is the?
Original form, the first one.
The is Stano. Because it means the form when he came out of the pillar. That's in this appearance. Because some appearances, he starts with 1,000 arms.
Oh.
Like that, because he kills the army. Because when he comes, the army comes first.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Then after, he'll take the eight-arm form, you know, when he's fighting with Hiranyakashipu. Then when he kills them, then 10 arms. So it's this, you know, it's variety. It's like that. Sometimes, one time he's so big that when he kills Hiranyakashipu, because he was, you know, in comparison so small,
that
after killing him, he couldn't find him. He's looking around, he thought the demon got away. So he's looking frantically about, and then eventually shakes his hands, and he was under his nails. And he was, you know, pacified that the demon's dead. Right? You know, so he had these like that. I think this is all in Hari Vamsa, I think, is where all these stories are told. So Nrisimha Dev has a lot of forms. Yes.
Yeah, earlier it was mentioned that he's in the same category as Krishna and Ram as a Paravasta form. So that's why it says this Lila avatar is just a Vilas form of Nrisimha.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that? What is it called?
Paravasta.
Paravasta.
That's what the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita
is about. Oh, it's about. Okay. Yeah. So then we'll get into that. Yes. Because that then you have then Lord Chaitanya, Ramachandra, like that.
Yeah.
Paravasta. Okay. Text 65. Korma is also described in the first canto. The 11th incarnation of the Lord took the form of a tortoise, whose shell served as a pivot for the Mandarachala hill, which was being used as a churning rod by the theists and atheists of the universe. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.16. The Lord, as Ajita, put the Mandara mountain on his back by taking a turtle form. Text 66. It is said in the Padma Purana that Korma, who lifted the Mandara mountain, also held up the earth when requested by the devatas. In Vishnu Dharmotra, however, it is said the Kurma who lifts up the earth appeared at the beginning of the Kalpa and later appeared in order to lift the Mandara mountain. The Kurma who was holding up the Mandara mountain also picked up the earth from the lower regions on the request of the devatas. According to the Padma Purana, according to another scripture, Vishnu Dharmotra, the Kurma who held up the earth appeared at the beginning of the day of Brahma and then appeared to hold up the Mandara mountain during the Chakshusha Manvantara. This proposition should be accepted as the conclusion because it takes both incidents into consideration and it is the place at the end of the topic. Okay, so according to another, then Kurma held up the earth and then appeared to hold up the Mandara mountain. So,
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada Hare Krishna Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki
Jai
Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai
Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai Jai